Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, are we loaded? This on a Wednesday is the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on iHeartRadio. We're on Fox Sports Radio, and we are on FS1. Cleanly shaven, wearing my Raptor black. Joy is in Golden State Warrior gold.
Oh, I am not.
Sort of looks like it. Tipping your hand.
It kind of is, but that was not the purpose.
I'm going with the Raptors with an upset win tonight.
I am, too.
All right. I don't know if I've ever used this line on the air, Joy, but I do think you and I think I know you enough, well enough, to say this, and I know this describes me. I believe in life we all become what we overcome. Not what mom gives you, not the prep school. You will become, all you guys listening, all you parents listening, your kids will become what they have to overcome. And that will create a metal and an armor and a toughness and a drive and a focus. Charles Barkley, who I love, disagree with a lot, but I love him, said this about Kevin Durant going to the Knicks. He goes, he's one of the greatest players I've ever seen. He's also got some of the thinnest skin I've ever seen. I don't know if you're made for New York City. He's arguing with these teenagers online. You're not going to be able to deal with the New York media. He's a great person. He's a great player. I don't think he has the mental makeup to play in New York. Charles is right. And I don't blame Kevin Durant. You become what you overcome. And I want you to think about this. Let's talk about Michael Jordan for a second. Probably the greatest basketball player of all time. Cut from his high school team. Goes to Carolina, the number one or number two basketball power. Total microscope. Hell, he may be the second biggest program in his own state. ACC was easily the best conference in college basketball. Goes to Chicago, two coaches fired, battles with teammates the entire time. Quentin Daly, Orlando Woolridge, they called him a ball hog. Then they get a new coach, and he can't get past Detroit. Three straight years, the Pistons beat him. He leaves, go to baseball, and struggles in minor league baseball. Can't hit the curve. Comes back first year to Chicago. People forget about this. Loses to Orlando in the playoffs. Three more titles. What made Michael Jordan was all the adversity, all the no, all the rejection. Let's take LeBron James. Now, it's not quite as difficult for LeBron because every generation has generally, every basketball star generation's got a little easier life. But at 16, he's on the cover of SI under a microscope. He goes to his hometown, Cleveland. A little pressure. Got to win. Two coaches fired. Doesn't get along with the owner. Can't beat the Boston Celtics. Adversity. He goes to Miami. Got to win four titles. Got to win five. Some of it self-inflicted pressure. Lose the first year. The decision. Getting crushed. Then he goes to Cleveland. There's a lot of adversity. A lot of adversity. Now, Michael faced more than LeBron simply because LeBron had more money earlier and because generally it's easier for basketball stars today than what it was 30 years ago. But LeBron multiple times has been the villain, battling an owner, fired coach, adversity. Now let's go to Kevin Durant. You are what you overcome. Kevin Durant goes to a football school to play basketball. Actually, for as great as he is, that's sort of low profile. How often do I talk Texas college basketball? Then he goes to Seattle, which geographically might as well be Juneau, Alaska. Isolated. Then they go to Oklahoma City. Small market media, mostly beloved. I mean, mostly beloved. He once complained about a headline in a newspaper. He didn't like it. Then he goes to Golden State. Well, come on. It's the Ritz-Carlton of basketball teams. The coach is smart. The players are great. The system's in place. Where's the adversity? I'm not saying his life is all rainbows. But we become what we overcome. Michael Jordan just went through gravel road and off road. And Kevin Durant's basketball life has been a football school, hiding in Seattle, comfortable in Oklahoma City, joining the greatest team ever. So that's what he is now. He is a great, great basketball player. But does he have the metal Does he have the metal to deal with New York? And let me throw this in, because I've lived this experience. When you stay at the Ritz-Carlton, it's much, much more difficult to then stay at the Bates Motel. Like, if you never stayed at a Ritz-Carlton or a Four Seasons or a Mandarin or all the, and you just always stayed, like, at the Hilton. Hiltons are nice, right? They're solid. I stayed at a lot of Hiltons. Well, then if you have to stay at the Bates Motel, you're like, well, it's not as nice. But when you live at the Ritz, and that's what the Warriors are, the culture, the GM played, the coach played, Steph Curry's the easiest superstar to play with. Klay Thompson doesn't talk. The rough guy to get along with is Draymond Green, and a lot of people say Draymond and KD are actually closer than people think. And then you go to the Knicks. Owner, I'll pass. Roster, terrible. Front office, people say it's good. Prove it to me. You know, you start looking at KD, I don't think it could just not be about titles. I think New York could be a disaster for him. Brett Favre went from the well-run Packers, say what you want about Green Bay, pretty darn well-run for most of the last 25 years. They don't always have the perfect coach, but they draft well, they're smart, they're not a lot of chaos. He goes to the Jets. Man overboard. When you have been without chaos, and then you're inserted with pressure to chaos, also throw this in. If I said to you, name the star in the NBA who is great, but he can be a little difficult to deal with and he's a little erratic. Kyrie Irving, that's who would join you? I'd take AD in a heartbeat over that. So this is not a criticism of Kevin Durant. It is not. But his basketball reality is not Michael Jordan's basketball reality. Cut. Carolina. Massive pressure, fighting with teammates, coaches fired, can't get past Detroit. By the time Michael Jordan finally won a title, he grabbed that trophy like it was a puppy and started bawling because that he had been through so many obstacles. And Kevin Durant's first title, he loved it. I don't remember the crying. I mean, the tougher the road, the longer the cry. And again, I like KD. I think he's the best basketball player in the world. I'm a fan. He's sensitive. But here's a little video. He does get a little sensitive with the social media and the criticism thing.
I have nothing to do with the Knicks. I don't know who traded Porzingis. They got nothing to do with me. I'm trying to play basketball. Y'all come here every day, ask me about free agency, ask my teammates, my coaches. You rile up the fans about it. Y'all let us play basketball. That's all I'm saying. And now when I don't want to talk to y'all, it's a problem with me. Come on, man.
You are talking to the media.
So? Who are you? Why do I got to talk to you?
How are you playing? How's the team playing in the last couple weeks?
I'm done. You know you don't care about that.
Listen, he's not mean-spirited. He's a good guy. But Charles Barkley here summed it up. He's arguing with teenagers online. That's true. That's why we all laugh when he says that. We're like, oh, my God, he's right. He is arguing with teenagers online. You are, you become what you overcome. He hasn't overcome to the level of MJ, level of LeBron, I don't think, in my opinion. All right, let me shift to this. So yesterday, about halfway through our show, Joy, the story broke that Anthony Davis and Rich Paul have told the Pelicans, listen, we love you, nice couple of breakfasts, but we're out of here. So the Pelicans, the story broke yesterday. The Pelicans now, David Griffin, smart guy, used to be in Cleveland with Rich Paul. LeBron knows him well. They're going to make a move for him. And remember this. Don't kid yourself on this. I've been told this by more than one executive. When you make a big draft pick or you make a trade as an executive, got to make sure the owner thinks you won the trade. That's a real thing. That's why a lot of times executives float rumors to see how it plays on media, talk show, radio, TV. Okay, it's not a disaster. Here's the narrative. Don't kid yourself. This is a real thing. So Anthony Davis and Rich Paul now, they have the leverage. As my golden rule of trades is, when a star player said, I want out, get him out of town. Because every day, every month, every trading deadline that passes, the power goes to the agent and the star player. Because now everybody knows it's official. Pelicans have to trade him. And frankly, with Zion Williamson coming to town, they probably have to trade him soon, in the next month. If you really want a clean break, start over. Give Zion a draft pick, get the team. And everybody knows LeBron and the Lakers, right? They want him, and we know Anthony Davis has said there's three teams I want. So let's eliminate Boston, because Anthony Davis has shown no interest in Boston. Danny Ainge has shown no interest in losing a trade, and he's not given up Jason Tatum without guarantees. So let's just take Boston out of it. Anthony Davis has said Knicks, Clippers, Lakers. That's where I'll play. So that's where he's going to end up. Let me eliminate the Knicks. They don't have any players. They have better draft picks. They've got no players. You can't win with a bunch of 19-year-olds in this league. You want to get some players. You got to get some guys who can play and are proven. You can't have 9 draft picks with Zion and Drew Holiday. So take the Knicks out. They don't have the players. Let's take the Clippers out. I'm told the Clippers, Jerry West, they're lukewarm on Anthony Davis. They're not going to cobble together a package the Knicks or the Lakers would. They like him. They love Kawhi Leonard. They'll sell the farm for Kawhi. They won't for Anthony Davis. Okay, so now that leaves the Lakers, who I think have an advantage. So remember my initial premise. You've got to be able to go to your owner as an executive and say, we won the trade. Here's what I believe the Lakers would have to give up to get Anthony Davis. There's a story out today. The Pelicans and Griffin love Brandon Ingram. He's going. We also know the Lakers have the 4th pick. Griffin's going to want another pick, right? They're rebuilding, right? So he's going to take Brandon Ingram. Griffin loves him. We know he likes picks, so they'll take the 4th pick. My belief is they'll try to get the Lakers' first-round pick next year, but that's not important for this segment. Push it off. But I also believe they'll want Lonzo Ball. People are telling me Griffin and the Pelicans like Lonzo. And by the way, if you've got Zion and you got Brandon Ingram, you got 2 young guys who can score, but they're not really, you need a guard that can create things for them and they can finish. They're not like spot-up shooters, right? Lonzo works. And then the Lakers would be able to keep, they would land Anthony Davis and keep Kyle Kuzma. So let's look with my proposed trade what the Pelicans could take to their owner. David Griffin could take to his owner Lonzo Ball, Zion Williamson, All-Star Drew Holiday, Brandon Ingram, and the number 4th pick. You can absolutely take that to Gail Benson and say, this is amazing. This is unbelievable. You can say, we got the 2 Laker players we liked outside of LeBron. We loved Ingram. We liked Lonzo. They gave us both and the 4th pick. Now let's see what Rob Pelinka can say to Jeannie Buss. Here's what the Lakers can say. Hey, we didn't have to give up Kyle Kuzma. He's the guy like Brandon Ingram, except unlike Brandon Ingram and Lonzo, Kyle Kuzma can stay healthy. And the Lakers have LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Kyle Kuzma. That's an exceptional front court. And one of the hardest working players, Josh Hart, in the backcourt. So Rob Pelinka can go to Jeannie and say, I got you a 2nd star, and we got you the young player, the hard worker, leadership quality, stayed in college, never gets hurt. You got to be able to go to the owner and say, I think we won the deal, whether you did or not. And I think David Griffin could do it if he gets Brandon, Lonzo, and a 4 pick. And I believe Rob Pelinka can do it if he says, I got you a 2nd star and the 1 young player who never gets hurt and has shown real leadership qualities. So I think that's the Lakers' advantage. I'm not saying I'm not crossing my fingers on this. I would prefer more stars come to my hometown, but I'm just telling you, I think I've been told that before. In fact, I was told years ago by a general manager, assistant general manager in the NBA. It's a funny story, but I won't go too far into the story, but he said, sometimes, like your 2nd round pick, or if you have a later pick, like an 18th, 20th pick in the NBA, and you don't think he's ever going to be a starter for you, sometimes you just take the guy who was pretty good in the NCAA tournament because it's the only college basketball the owner watches. And if you have an international player the owner's never seen and he's not significantly better, according to your scouts, than the kid at the Final Four who were Elite Eight that was good, and your owners, they have them both. You have the grades are equal. Take the domestic Elite Eight, Final Four American kid over the international guy because the owner watched the kid in the Final Four and can go to his rich buddies and go, yeah, I love that kid. I saw that kid at Kansas. He was fantastic, and he can tell his wife and his mistress and his rich friends, yeah, I know a lot about basketball. That was my pick. I like him. It's hard to sell the kid from Dusseldorf that nobody saw play. So appeasing your owner in these professional sports leagues, it is a thing.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
It was a few days ago, Baker Mayfield. I put a bunch of stuff on Twitter, like my staff put stuff on Twitter, and Baker Mayfield reacted to it and took shots at me, and I didn't react. I have no interest in winning the debate on Twitter. Everything to me is the long play when I do this show. I don't worry about daily ratings. I'm worried about year to year. Are we growing? It's the long play. It's how Tom Brady quarterbacks. Tom Brady's the classic Tom versus time. It's all about the long play. It's not about getting into feuds and arguments and winning. So Baker Mayfield yesterday, Duke Johnson talks about wanting to be traded. Duke Johnson's a really good running back. And then the Browns have him. And then they draft another running back, Nick Chubb, who's also excellent, and then they make a deal to get Kareem Hunt, and Duke Johnson's like, I got no touches here. And so there's been rumors he's on the trade block, and he said yesterday, you know, just I want to play Baker Mayfield, and this is his personality. He wants to win the moment. He wants to win the press conference. He wants to win the debate, calls out Duke Johnson.
It's self-inflicted. It is what it is. It's not awkward for anybody else in this building. He's got to do his job. He said he's a professional. I hope he does his job. We have guys that want to be here. They'll show that. They'll voice that. You're either on this train or you're not. It's moving. You can get out the way or you can join us. So it is what it is.
And Baker won the moment, and he feels great. But Duke's still a teammate, and you're going to need him. This is who Baker is. This is the immaturity. And this is what kids do. They got to win the Twitter battle. They got to win the press conference. They got to win the moment. The police video is classic. The police pull up to Baker Mayfield. He doesn't think of consequences. Even if he escaped the cops, you'd still figure out it's Baker Mayfield, right? But he wanted to win the moment. I'm going to escape those cops. With no thought of consequences as a quarterback in college. Planting the flag, grabbing the crotch, winning the moment, winning the press conference, winning the debate. No sense of long play, long-term consequences. Russell Wilson lost a Super Bowl. Richard Sherman, emotional. Bury people. Rip coaches. He's out of Seattle. Russell Wilson was like, this hurts, but I want to be here for 12 years. Baker, stop trying to win the moment, win the press conference, win the soundbite, win the debate, win the Twitter war. Drew Brees, back-to-back years, has lost a heart-clutching game in the NFC, a playoff game that you have won and you lose. And the rest of New Orleans, the crazy fans, yell, scream, blame, NFL protest. Drew Brees' response is the long play.
There's nothing we can do about it, so it's unfortunate. You can go one of two directions, you know, either you can go in the tank or you can find a way for this to come together for good. And that was the mindset we took last year after the loss. And it really brought us together as a team and strengthened us. And I hope that this will too. I plan on being here next year and making another run at it.
A grown up. Not blaming the NFL, blaming the league, blaming the Rams, blaming Goodell. Quarterback is a grown up position. The long play. You buy stocks. Baker Mayfield's a day trader. Buy a stock, sell a stock. Won the stock, $9. Sold it for $10. I got a dollar. I won the debate. I call out my teammate. Brady's like, I buy the stock, Warren Buffett, and I hold the stock. Sometimes I have to move off the stock, but I do so covertly and quietly so it doesn't disrupt the system and create noise. Folks, we have a precedent. Noise is bad in the NFL. Ask the Steelers last year. 7-2 got noisy. Ask the Seahawks, had a dynasty, ended quickly. When Belichick and Brady, the only time they've had disruption, got noisy for about 2 months. Whether you agree with Baker yesterday calling out Duke, it's noise. It's winning the moment. It's not what quarterback's about in this league.
What's going on, everybody? John Middlecoff, the 3 and Out podcast. brought to you by Colin Cowherd's Podcast Network. You like Colin's show, you'll like mine. I'm talking football, football, and more football. Coming up on the show, 18 games in the NFL. That's inevitable. Also talk to my good friend, former NFL GM and former AAF GM on why the AAF fell apart. And more NFL topics. Phil Savage, John Middlecoff, Three and Out Podcast.
So I read a great story yesterday by Jason Jenks. It was on theathletic.com. And you got to pay for those articles, but they're very good. They had a story about Kawhi Leonard, and they went back to his college days. And they literally, it was a fascinating story. He used to take a lamp to the gym, get into the gym at San Diego State and play basketball and shoot all night. The guy is completely obsessed. The quotes go up and on about Kawhi Leonard, the hardest working player ever, the hardest working player. Tim Shelton was his college teammate. He said Kawhi had a lamp on different occasions. He'd been there late. The light box would be locked, so he'd bring a lamp in there. He'd put his finger under the door, unlatch it. He'd go in there and shoot with just he and the lamp. And once again, it's the story of hard work. And I love this story. It's the same Michael story. The same Kobe story, the same Brady story. Said DJ Gay, his college teammate, by far the hardest worker I've ever come across, I've ever known. Several times I tried beating him to the gym. No matter how early I got there, he was there before I was. This story, of course, reminds me of Corey Maggette, who lives close to Kobe Bryant. They're friends. One day they decided to meet the next morning at 6 a.m. for a workout. Corey Maggette pulled his Mercedes into the gym at 6 a.m. Kobe was leaving, rolled the window down. See you tomorrow, bro. Kobe'd been there since 4:30 a.m. Reminds me of the story of Wayne Gretzky. A dad comes up to Wayne Gretzky one time and says, "My son is really talented. How do I instill this sort of work ethic that I've read about you?" And Wayne said, "You don't. You couldn't pull me off the ice. My dad would take me off a rink he made at midnight because I had to go to bed." It reminds me of the story of the greatest tennis player I've ever watched, Roger Federer. In his prime, his average day was 5 sets, an hour of conditioning, an hour of drills. That was an average work day. Not a great work ethic day. That was every day. Folks, the world offers all sorts of choices and people lose their focus. But all these stories from Rush Limbaugh in my business is dedication, work ethic, shooting basketballs with the lights off, taking a lamp to the gym, driving up to meet Kobe at 6 in the morning, and he's driving out of the gym because he's been there since 4:40 a.m. I know, your mom's going to put you in a prep school and your dad tells you they're the best ever and you got this fund and that school and that advice and that resume. Nah, it's like in my business. Good luck on having a great agent. Awesome LinkedIn page. Are you willing to put 3 hours of prep into the show? Because that's what does it. The Kawhi Leonard story isn't really new. It's very predictable. Serena, Federer, Ronaldo, Kobe, Michael, Kawhi, Giannis. You ever notice they're always the hardest working guy anybody's ever played with?
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
JaVale McGee is joining us. 11 years in the NBA, champion 2017-2018 with the Warriors, came to the Lakers. And I said this on the air when you came there. I said, "I don't know how this is going to work. It's a bunch of kids. They're immature. JaVale McGee's got a big personality, and you are actually the shock of the season. I thought you had a great year. You were very formidable, and it's the first time the home team where I lived, you were on the home team." Mm-hmm. It's funny, JaVale. You got a reputation early. You're kind of fun, kind of crazy, kind of flaky. And then I watch it with the Warriors and the Lakers. That's not reality. Does it bother you at times that the perception of you early isn't reality this morning?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so when I came into the league, the things that kids are doing now, I was doing to where, like, using social media a lot. So, but when I came into the league, GMs were looking at it like, you're not focused. Like, why are you using Instagram? Why are you using Twitter? Like, get off of there. Stop making videos, putting them on YouTube and things like that. Now, when I went to the Warriors, PR is like, you need to post more on Twitter. You need to post more. And, like, it's good for feedback. So, like, it's just a whole different aspect. And I guess I was sort of ahead of my time, I guess. So it gave me a perception like I'm not serious about basketball or I'm not focused. And it really, like, messed up the character that I had that people really perceived me as.
But the Golden State Warriors didn't listen. They said, we like you. They brought you in. What did you help them with, and what did they help you with as a player?
Truthfully, I helped them with, I feel like, rim protection, if anything, and just having a big that's willing to do the dirty work and run the floor. And
you run the floor well.
I run the floor very well. Not worried about minutes, just being able to do whatever it takes to win. And they helped me with just realizing, like, going to the Warriors, like, probably first day at the Warriors, my perception was going to be like, okay, well, they're champions. It's probably tight-knit. I probably have to be like, I'm in the Army. It was probably one of the most relaxed environments I've ever been in. I've been on multiple teams. It was the most relaxed. I've been in practice like, is this okay? Like, Steph's shooting a half-court shot every time we stretch. Like, this is crazy. But it was just so relaxed, and it just showed me, like, just be a champion. Like, you don't have to be uptight and everything. It's real hard work, though. I don't want to take that perception away. It was hard work.
Yeah.
But we have fun playing hard.
It's interesting because we, you know, in the media, we hear a lot. Kevin Durant's going to leave, and I've said, listen, man, if I was his agent, A, I don't want him taking less. I don't want my players taking less. Secondly, it's a Ritz-Carlton. Like, everybody likes everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't trust the Knicks and their ownership. And to me, you can't overcome bad ownership. In my career doing this, I've been incredibly lucky. I've had one bad owner, and you can't overcome it. I've had four great owners, one I didn't like. And in the end, if you were KD's agent, what would you tell him?
First of all, if I was KD's agent, I would tell KD to do what he wants to do because it's his life. You know what I'm saying? He has to live with his decision. So wherever he wants to go, whatever money he wants to take, then that's his decision to do. I wouldn't be that guy who's like, you should go here, you here. I would definitely weigh out the options, lay them out, tell him everything that's positive and negative, all the pros and cons. But other than that, it's his decision.
Now, what about Charles Barkley? New York's going to eat him up.
So I heard this, what he said about that, and that he wouldn't be able to survive out there. But in my opinion, if Charles Barkley grew up in the era of social media and he could respond to the things that people were saying about him when he would do the same thing. Like, if someone said on Twitter, you're this, you're that, you're going to be like, okay, 1,000 people just said it. I'm responding to this one just every now and then. But I feel like the media portrays it as like, oh, he's sensitive. No, like, we live in a world where information is just so fast and we see everything. When Charles Barkley was playing, like, you would have to wait till the morning newspaper came out to hear somebody talk stuff about you. So
right.
It's a totally different aspect. I don't take that as being sensitive or not being able to handle it.
How does Steph, I find it fascinating because Steph is such a unique superstar. You know, goes home, married, kids, quiet, don't hear stuff, and recruits Kevin Durant. Take me behind the scenes. What's the secret sauce with Steph?
Steph is one of the nicest guys I've ever met in my life. And to just think of the superstardom that he's at, he doesn't have to be that nice. But he's extremely nice, maybe too nice. Like, he's one of the nicest guys I've ever met in my life. And to be the superstar status that he's at, to do the things that he does on the court, off the court also, the family man he is pretty impressive.
They're the best third quarter team in league history. And we were talking about this yesterday. They're a little like the New England Patriots. They don't play well early in Super Bowls. They always play great after halftime. You've been in for two championships. You have been on this Warrior team, JaVale McGee joining us, and trailed at half, struggled. And then the Warriors go in for 15 minutes, and it's magic. It's David Copperfield. It's Chris Angel. You're making stuff elevate. You've been in that halftime session. Is it intense, loud? Like, what happens?
It's not necessarily intense. Coming from Draymond is loud, but it's intentional. The first half, it seems like you, as a championship team, you have the confidence of, okay, we're going to win. Sometimes they would take people for granted, and then in the second half, they're like, okay, they came out, they hit us in the mouth, now it's time to turn it up. And that's all it really was. Like, okay, third quarter action. We know what we do. We know what we have. Let's step it up. And that's how it will work out.
I want to shift now to the Lakers. It was a weird year. It was a weird combination. So LeBron historically has played well with shooters. And LeBron tends to play well with veterans. He's a smart dude. So you got a LeBron guy who plays well with veterans, plays well with shooters. Well, he goes to the Lakers, and it's a bunch of kids, and then it's mostly guys who aren't known as great shooters. Rondo's a good player, not a shooter. Lance, a good athlete, not a shooter. It never felt kind of perfect, but you were on the roster. The trade stuff happens, mm-hmm. all these rumors. And there's stories, JaVale, that it's freaking the kids out, which I get. If you told me tomorrow my name's in the paper, I'm being shipped to, you know, whatever. How chaotic was it? Like, how hard was it on the kids to read in the papers and on Bleacher Report, yeah, you're all getting shipped out of town?
First of all, they didn't read in the papers. I'm going to tell you that right now.
Internet, maybe.
Internet, all social media. But, I mean, so I've been traded before, and the first time I got traded, the first day that I'm hearing all this information, and this is the social media age, I'm like, dang, like, it's terrifying. Like, you're like, okay, I'm leaving my home. I have all my stuff, all my family, everything I know here. Like, it really shake you up if this is your first time hearing it, especially as a young guy. But, I mean, if you've been traded before, you're like, okay, it's a part of the business. You learn it as a part of the business. But these are young guys. These guys, and they're in L.A. Like, you got to think, okay, this is my livelihood. I'm in beautiful L.A., and I have to – I'll be shipped somewhere else, which isn't L.A. So, I mean, of course, I'll be a little shook, but, I mean, that's natural for anybody who's their first time going to be traded or hearing serious reports that they're going to be traded.
So you freaked out a little bit?
Yeah, the first time I got traded, I was freaked out. But after that, you're just like, it's a business, and that's all it really is. So you have to be a professional about it.
So LeBron gets hurt, and I'd never seen an injury. I've said this for years, JaVale. One of the most amazing things about LeBron, the second chapter of his book, the first chapter is that dude may be the best player ever. The second chapter is his body. Like, all Michael Jordan broke a leg, missed a year. Stockton did. Everybody gets hurt. Except LeBron.
Yeah.
So when LeBron faced his first career injury, what was he like? I mean, that's daunting. Talk about trade. How was LeBron?
I mean, surprisingly, he was lighthearted, extremely lighthearted. I mean, he really doesn't have anything to worry about, really. I mean, his contract's fine. He's there for a lot of years. There isn't really anything to worry about. But just the way that he came back and the way that he was working in that time that he was injured was truly amazing. And, I mean, truthfully, the fact that he got hurt, Lonzo got hurt, players got in fights, so that suspended. Our starting five really only had, like, 10 games, and that's exaggerating without actually knowing the actual being together and being able to get our chemistry. This is our first year together. Like, we should at least be able – we never got a chance to get our chemistry together. Everybody got hurt at once. I got pneumonia. Like, everything happened to this team on the injury side, and then they tried to play it like it's all this other stuff. No, we got injured, like everybody.
You've played with LeBron, Durant, Clay, Steph, Draymond. I'm looking at the teams you've played with here. Dirk.
Gilbert Arenas.
Okay, so of all the stars, you know, you've played, they're all different cats, right? The player that I find fascinating in this league, he literally becomes double the player as Draymond Green. So Draymond in the regular season goes 7-7-7. And then I'm watching him in the playoffs, and JaVale, there are games I think he's the best player on the floor along with Kawhi.
Mm-hmm.
Take me into Draymond. Like, analytics don't even work for him. He literally puts on a cape in, like, May and June. Take me behind the scenes on, again, the secret sauce on Draymond, because I think he's going to have a chance to be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, definitely. The focus that Draymond puts into every game, the studying, the things that he knows about other players or games. You'll play against a player and he'll be like, oh, what does he do? Draymond will come out of nowhere. Oh yeah, he's probably left hand. He's gonna shoot over the left shoulder, and if he doesn't do that, he's gonna come back with a pump fake. So watch out for that. Like, he knows everything about every player. He studies the game extreme. Like,
on his own,
there isn't like you have to do this. Like, that's just his thing. He loves basketball, and you can just tell it, and you can see it in his game also.
By the way, celebrity softball game. This is June 22nd. JaVale's Jug Life Foundation. Bring safe and clean water to underdeveloped areas around the world. By the way, you grew up in Flint, Michigan.
I did.
So this is a very personal thing for you. Jug Life also spreads the message of how important water is for healthy and active lifestyles. Team JaVale versus Team Lonzo Ball. You know, LeVar was on yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I keep bringing LeVar on because I think he's done a pretty good job with his sons, and he's a little crazy, and there's a lot of nonsense. But yesterday he answered all the questions. He never ducks a question. Do you think there's ever a little pressure on Lonzo because dad's public? A little bit, do you feel?
Maybe it's a little pressure, but the thing that surprised me how everybody's on LeVar for being a sports dad. Like, if I'm going to – that's my son. Like, the way that he's in his son's lives, in his kids' lives, especially as a black man, is amazing. Like, he's there every game, like, focused. Like, he has his kids back and nothing else. Like, it's pretty impressive. He says a lot of things. I mean, of course, Lonzo probably doesn't like everything he says, but in my opinion, I mean, he's a great dad, if anything.
Lonzo struggled with his health. Do you buy into Lonzo long-term as a player?
Oh, yes. Just Why? Seeing the focus, like, okay, so when people get injured, they tend to have go down in spirit. But he had a great spirit this whole time that he's been injured. He's in there every day working in the weight room. And it's coming from a person who's behind the scenes, sees it all. He's training. He hasn't missed a training session. Like, you get fined for things like that. And, like, people are really paying attention that he hasn't missed any of that since I've been there. So it's not like he's not trying to get healthy. Like, he just had a bad injury. And it's just been lingering. That's all it is. But when he's healthy, oh, my goodness, an amazing.
He started finishing at the rim last year.
Man, because what it is you really need those people behind you to be like me personally. I'm that type of guy who if someone lays the ball up, I'm booing them, even if they're on my team. I'm when they're going down the court, I'm like, boo, you're supposed to dunk that. Like, we playing basketball. This is fun. Dunk that thing. Like, this is how we do it. You know what I'm saying? It's just a.
He did last year. I got to give Lonzo credit for about 8 to 10 games before he got hurt. He got – because the knock on him was he's a little passive,
yeah.
And he started finishing at the rim. People forget, he's 6'6 guard.
And athletic is – I don't know what. Like, he can – yes. So, like, that's what we're doing behind the scenes. Like, we're like, dunk it. Like, dunk on anybody that's in the way. Like, why not? Like, just do it. Like, why not?
JugLifeWater.com for tickets. Jug, J-U-G, life. JugLifeWater.com for tickets. Absolute pleasure meeting you, man.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You had a great year for the Lakers. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So it sounds like I think psychology is big in sports. I always have. There are different times that you can do things and you make things very clear. You're better than your opponents. And you don't have to say a word. I thought the Golden State Warriors made a big impression winning game two in Toronto. KD ain't here, and Klay's not here, and Steph didn't score in the fourth, and we beat you in Toronto. I think that dinged the Raptors. Can you imagine if the Warriors tonight, they can play Klay. Klay's good enough to play, and they choose not to, and they win. We don't have Klay. We don't have Kevin Durant, and we beat you. Series is over. Series is over. Psychologically, it's over. I mean, this goes back to Sean McVay acknowledging at the Super Bowl he overprepared. Belichick wins a lot of this stuff before the game starts. You know, Mike Tyson used to always say that. I've won my fights before it starts. People go see me knock guys out and knock their heads off. I've won the fight before it starts. Guys will not bear down on me. They're jabbing me. They're staying away. They don't use their leverage because they're afraid I'm going to knock their head off. And I wouldn't play Klay Thompson tonight. And my takeaway is when Boogie Cousins came back and really crushed it, it changed everything. I'll give you an example. We're all young, right? Right? You're all young, and we've all struggled, right, financially. And then there's that moment in a lot of your lives. This happened to me. That I found $100 in my jeans pocket and I was doing the laundry. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. I didn't need it. And I don't remember when it was, but I remember the washing machine. I remember where I was. I don't remember the year or how old I was, but it was a while back. And I found $100 in a pair of jeans and I thought, and I didn't miss it. I'm like, I've made it. Like, I'm not struggling check to check constantly. Boogie Cousins was that hundy you find in your jeans that you forgot. They didn't think they were getting 28 minutes from Boogie Cousins. They didn't have a clue. They didn't have any idea he was going to give him 28 and arguably be the determining factor late in the game. You just found a hundy in your jeans after you pulled it out of the dryer. So now I got tonight, I can go Steph. Yeah, he's pretty good. Draymond, been a monster. Iggy, Boogie Cousins, Sean Livingston. And then I go, Andrew Bogut, Quinn Cook's off the bench, and I'm at home where we haven't played since mid-May, and Oracle's going to be a zoo. It's going to be the loudest it's been since like 3 years ago when Warrior fans weren't sitting on their hands. I'd roll the dice because I think if you win tonight, if let's say Klay comes back, re-aggravates it, disaster, he's out for the series. Okay, now I got issues. Now that favors psychologically Toronto. Oh, Klay's gone. We game plan a little different. Why risk re-aggravating it? This team won Sunday in Canada with Steph not scoring, Klay not playing, and KD out. And I think, let's say worst case scenario, Warriors don't play Klay and lose tonight. And you're down 2-1. You still have game 4 and game 6 at home. And I get a healthier Klay, Steph, Draymond, Boogie, Iggy, and Kevin Durant. Because according to a story today, he is ramping up his exercise routine, said Steve Kerr, meaning he is going to play at least by game 5, and we're in game 3. So if I told you right now, games 5, 6, and 7, I've got the Warriors, Boogie. We don't even know who Toronto's second scorer is. Kawhi Leonard, in every series, appears to be getting worn down. I would not play Klay. Part of it is health. Part of it's psychology. Part of it's the emergence of Boogie Cousins. But I think it makes a ton of sense. I think it makes a ton of sense. I wouldn't do it. And by the way, it would crush the Raptors' spirit. It would completely crush their spirit. If it's not already dinged because of winning in Canada Game 2 without Klay and KD, if you win tonight without KD, Klay full-time, it's over. Series is over. Psychologically, it's done.